Working in consulting, it can be very fast and it can be very chaotic. And I definitely worked at a couple of places where, the boss would just like stick his head in your office door and yell something at you. And I did really, really badly at those places.
Hey, fellow workers, you are listening to episode 3 of season 5 of the Alberta Worker Podcast. My name is Kim Seaver, and we are broadcasting from the territory in the Niitsitapi. The Alberta Worker Podcast is a proud member of the Labour Radio Network, as well as the Harbinger Media Network. And I am pleased to introduce you all to today's guest, Justin Lorne. Welcome, Justin.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You betcha. So glad to have you. I'm looking forward to listening to your story. So yeah, we'll just start off with you sharing with us your life story, where you grew up, what family life was like, where you went to school, that sort of thing, and as well your own personal labor history. The time is all yours.
My life story is going to be circuitous and messy and confusing because it's not a very linear story. I'm originally from Saskatchewan. I was born
It
in
was.
Regina. Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I was born in Moose Jaw, grew up in Regina.
I was born in Regina, spent some time in Swift Current, ended up back in Regina, bounced back and forth between those towns for quite a while. Spent a lot of time playing in punk rock bands, a lot of times doing as little as possible, trying to get by, trying to figure out, how I fit in a messy, complicated, sometimes ugly world. Worked many different jobs in that time. Did the same things as everybody else. I worked in construction, worked in agriculture, anywhere that needed, a pair of hands. And that's about it. And I guess that's probably my first intro to labor and the nature of labor to capital and to business and that whole story.
Right.
Realizing what you're giving up compared to what's being given back to you is, even if you can't articulate it at that point in time, you can see the relationship, I think.
You could just tell something is off, something's unfair.
Yeah, and it took me a long time to be able to think that through and like put it into words, but there was always that sense. And I think a lot of us, at least the people around me as kids, we all had that sense, even if none of us could really quite say what was on our minds.
Sure.
Then in 2009, I think, I moved to Alberta. I went to Lethbridge for a couple of years to go to school. I know we're following very similar paths. I did a diploma in environmental assessment and restoration at Lethbridge College, which was good. It's a nice town. I liked it down there. Had good experiences there. After a couple of years there, I got offered a job out of Edmonton. So I moved up to the Edmonton area with the full intention of sticking around for about a year and then finding somewhere that wasn't Edmonton to go to live. About 6 months into that plan, I met my now wife. She's from Beaumont. That kind of became a thing. And now it's 2026, and I'm still in the Edmonton area. So.
When we moved to Lethbridge to go to school, the idea was I would graduate school and then we move on to Regina so I can move back home. And it just never happened. It just kind of set up roots and just stayed here.
I guess a bit about what I've been doing in Edmonton this whole time. I got a job working in the environmental consulting industry. So basically, anytime there's contamination issues, I get hired to fix them, is the very short
Okay.
version of that, which can be anything from like somebody spilled gasoline onto the ground to, catastrophic. People are being poisoned, all sorts of interesting things. And so in the past, whatever, 15 years of that, I ended up going to school through Athabasca University and getting my bachelor's degree while I was working, and then almost a master's degree as well. I still have to write a capstone paper for that, which I am putting off and putting off and putting off because I don't want to do it.
Sure.
Probably this winter. And I've kind of fallen into a specialization. Mostly I work way up in the far north in the Arctic. And I do a lot of work with emerging contaminants. Like people hear like stuff about like PFAS on the news and those kind of things. That's kind of my business now. So
Okay, interesting.
yeah, it is. I find it interesting and depressing, but
Especially in the winter time.
yeah. And then especially you realize how little difference you make sometimes.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
the scale of the problem. It's a good lesson in like focusing on the things that you can deal with and like not stressing out about these like big like global scale or like national scale issues, because it can be so easy to like, I can't remember what the word is. There's like a paralysis that people get with like climate issues. It's
Oh,
like, man,
right.
this is such a big issue. Like, what do I do? And you just kind of freeze up and do nothing. So being faced with that constantly, it's kind of good because you realize, well, I can do something. Even if I fix this one little piece of earth, well, that's one that wasn't fixed before. So
True. That's
just
true.
chip away and chip away and chip away. And if everybody's chipping away, then a lot gets chipped away at.
Yeah.
And then the other thing consulting really teaches you quickly, circling back to that labor conversation, we're a business where we sell time, much like engineers or lawyers do. It's a business model that churns through people and burns people out. When you get into the door, don't realize or aren't in a position to say no to people. As I've gotten further into my career and kind of stuck with it, you know, now I'm at a position where I can just tell people, you know, go to hell. I'm busy. I don't want to do that. Somebody else can figure it out. When you're young, you can't do that because you're like new person in the door, and it's like everybody's asking you to do something, and you work, you know, 90 hours a week and you're never home, and it's like just crushes people. And then you find out that you're doing it to put money in somebody's pocket. Like, I worked for a company for a while that was not bad, and then they got bought and they did their like whole IPO thing. So they were trying to like make the margins look real good. And so they were just grinding all of us into nothing. It's like, man, for what?
Yeah, and even then, like the valuation that they have of the company is based off the labor of the workers who are building the company, right? When that IPO goes out, it's not the workers who get that initial public offering.
Oh, exactly. It's like, yeah, we're grinding and grinding and grinding and, you know, scraping pennies together. It's like,
Yeah.
for what?
Yeah, totally.
The last couple of years, actually, I've been working for a company that's employee owned, which has been really good. In practical terms, that kind of means management owned, because there's like a barrier to, you have to be at the company for a while. There's a bit of a buy-in, like a not crazy high, but enough that it takes a while to
Right.
save that kind of money up.
Sure.
But they have done good enough at keeping that barrier low that, like, I interact with owners, you know, I know probably a half dozen that I see every day. And, you know, and then a couple of years, if I stick around, I'll probably end up being one too.
Sure.
And that's been really good. It was a very like refreshing change of scenery, because there still is that they're taking money off of, you know, my hourly charge out rate that's going to the owners, that it's a thing that happens.
Right.
But I think because there's so many owners and they're kind of sprinkled through the company at a bunch of different levels, there's not that divorce between the workers and the owners. And a lot of them are pretty new owners, so it hasn't been that long. And I think maybe they know that if they screw the workers too hard, those people could stick around for a couple of years and then they're in the driver's seat.
Right. That's true. That's true. It's a little bit extra motivation there.
Yeah, so they've been really good about like putting money back into the company and in back into the people. They like to do it through like perks and development and stuff, but we're getting more than like, you know, the pizza party.
That's cool.
Yeah. What else can I tell you about me?
Where did you go to school in Regina?
I did a year at the University of Regina.
Sorry, I meant like primary and
Oh, sorry.
secondary school.
Oh yeah. I did most of my high school at Leboldus.
Oh, I haven't heard of that one.
It's in Southend.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, you know where the Golden Mile Mall is? Is that
I
still there?
don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't lived there since 1989.
Okay. Yeah, I go back about once every like 3 years, so my references might be way outdated too.
Yeah, when I go back, I'm just driving through on my way to Winnipeg because our second oldest lives out there. So I was out there last year, and then before that was 2023, and before that was 2014. So I don't get
Oh
out there very often.
yeah.
Cool. And what did your parents do when you were growing up?
My dad's, I don't know what he does. He doesn't know what he does. He was in the insurance business for a while and then got a little bit more into like finance. He does like management stuff now, but the way he talks about it, he doesn't do very much.
So just like
No,
consulting sort of stuff.
he's in charge of stuff. Like, I think he probably does a lot, but he does one of those management type jobs where it's all very like soft skills.
Lots of meetings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my mom worked for the city of Swift Current for a long time, just recently
Oh,
retired.
okay. What was she doing there?
She did dispatch and that kind
Oh.
of thing for their light and power.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
And do you have any siblings?
I do. I have had four, I guess. It's always a weird question because one of them has passed away, so I never know quite how to answer that.
Sure.
My parents split up when I was very young, so I
Oh,
have four
okay.
half brothers, two on my dad's side, two on my mom's side. One of them on my mom's side passed away in 2014. So,
So your
whether.
parents splitting up is why you moved back and forth between Regina and Swift Current?
Yeah, my
Okay.
dad ended up in Regina, my mom ended up in Swift, so I was back and forth.
Yeah, my parents split up when I was really little too, like 3 or 4 years old. And so I have three half siblings through my dad and three step siblings because my mom got remarried to somebody who already had children. But, and what do your siblings do?
So the next eldest in line is a geologist. He works at a mine in Ontario and he's finishing his PhD in Quebec City. So he works,
Oh.
does like a two on, two off kind of thing.
Okay.
So yeah, he's a bit of an overachiever, I suppose. Next one in line is a mural artist, a graffiti artist.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're all a little jealous. He just
Yeah.
travels the world.
Oh, wow.
He has a great thing going where he seems to show go somewhere, work for like a month, make a bunch of money, and then just hang out for a while.
That's cool.
Yeah. Like I remember my dad was trying to get him to nail down if he was going to come home for Christmas one year. And he's like, I don't know, I might just stay in Malaysia for a while. And then, yeah, the youngest one is in, I guess you'd call it like eco-tourism. He works out like a lodge on Vancouver Island.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I went out there, visit him, and we kind of hung out for a few days. It's a really nice place. If he wasn't my
Cool.
brother, I would never have been able to afford to go there.
Yeah, no doubt.
I got to stay in the crew quarters. I couldn't afford to stay in the nice place.
Your wife, what does she do?
She's a hairdresser. She owns her own salon.
In Beaumont?
In Leduc, where
Oh,
her and I
okay.
are in Leduc now.
It's not too far away. Cool. Does she speak French?
No, not a word. I speak better French than her.
Okay.
Mine's not very good.
She grew up in Beaumont but can't speak any French.
Yeah.
Wow,
Her, she has a French last name too, so you figure that one out.
my mom's French last name, and I can sort of speak French, but I struggle in conversations. So as long as people are patient with me and speak slowly, I can get by.
My soon-to-be sister-in-law is French, and I try, but she just, I get like the pity English.
Oh, yeah.
Let's not embarrass ourselves. We'll just go to English.
Well, when you don't get a lot of opportunity to practice, then that's what happens.
Yeah, it's basically that.
Yeah, and I learned all my French I learned in school, primary school, secondary school, and then in university. So, like, I didn't go on any exchange trips or anything like that. So, I've never really been immersed in it. So, it's just what I can pick up and then remember. So, I struggle with it a bit. Cool. And so now you are where you're at now.
Yeah, now I'm at where I'm at now. And I guess the other thing that's probably worth talking about that will kind of play into your question later is I have been diagnosed as on the autism spectrum. I was diagnosed as an adult.
Same.
I was maybe 19, 20, going through some pretty rough mental health stuff. And I remember sitting down with a therapist, talking with them, through a series of sessions. And they kind of said, like, you should really go get an assessment done for this. And being 20-year-old me, I didn't because I don't know. I figured what's a, piece of paper going to do for me?
Sure.
And then we had my son in 2016, and he was diagnosed probably 2019, quite early. Like, we, or my wife especially, picked up on it very early. She's a very good advocate. Like, he's gotten, all the help he could possibly get.
It's awesome.
I can't say enough good things about her. And, as we kind of progressed in that, I kind of kept thinking back to those old conversations because I'd be hanging out with my son and he'd do something. And I kind of get the look from my wife. And I was like, yeah, I know. It's exactly the same thing I do. It's like, we're the same person. I get it. You get to thinking and it's like, well, maybe I should just know. right? Like, I don't want to go
Right.
through being like, well, that's probably me, but maybe it's not. And so I went and I got it done. And yeah,
How long ago was that?
probably 3 years ago.
Okay, cool. My niece, my oldest niece, has a child who has been diagnosed with autism as well and has quite a bit of support needs, but still is in a regular classroom and all that kind of stuff. But every so often, he'll be at my mom and dad's house and he'll be doing something. And my mom will look at him and is like, wow, this just reminds me a lot of Kim. A lot of the stuff he does, it just keeps coming back to her. It's like, oh, I just didn't pick up on it back then. I was only diagnosed last year, so.
Oh yeah. It's kind of an interesting thing, like to go through the process and then to think back through your life. And it's like, oh, okay. I wish I could have had the conversation with me at 20 when I was thinking like, what is this going to mean for me?
Absolutely.
I've gotten to a point. I've kind of fumbled my way through to being able to put myself in positions where I can succeed. But seeing how it can work, like with my son, it's like, oh, I didn't need to like take 15 years to figure this out. Somebody could have just told me, you know, this is how you need to set things up.
Right.
That would have been great.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It would be nice to have that little bit of extra information. You hear every once in a while people say, if you could go back and talk to your 18-year-old self and tell them just three words, what would you say? You know, stuff like that. And I would say, you have autism.
Yeah. It would definitely have changed the way I approached a lot of things for a lot of years.
Yeah, totally.
Cut out a lot of struggling.
On that note, one question I always ask my guests is, how has your intersections of marginalization ever influenced your experiences as a worker? And usually what I mean by that is, you know, ways that maybe your ethnicity or your gender or sexual orientation or ability levels, religion, economic class, whatever, might have influenced how others have treated you in the workplace. Fellow workers, bosses, customers, whatever. I anticipate there might be something related to that with autism, but if there are other ways as well, feel free to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, autism is probably the thing that jumps out. There's not a lot else about me that differentiates me very much from a lot of other people in the workplace. Working in consulting, it can be very fast and it can be very chaotic. And I definitely worked at a couple of places where, you know, the boss would just like stick his head in your office door and yell something at you. And I did really, really badly at those places.
Yeah.
Because like I don't process audio very well. One of the things I get worked to do now, and having that piece of paper has been helpful, is like I want everything in writing. Like we can meet and we can talk, but if you have like demands or something I need to take out of a meeting, like write it down for me.
Yeah.
You know, and I might not come up with a question while we're talking back and forth, but 20 minutes from now I might think of something.
Yeah.
And I think back to working at those companies, you just like crash and burn and you don't understand why.
Yeah, totally. The second to last job, no, sorry, third to last job I've had working for somebody else. It was with a trucking company and it was pretty intense. I actually wrote about it some time ago on the Alberta Worker website if people want to read it. But it was like an open office concept. So we had probably three or four dozen of us all in the same big open area. Everybody had their little cubicles. The walls of the cubicles only came up to like my forehead. They weren't full cubicles, so you never really had any privacy. And there's always so much noise. The phones are constantly ringing. The dispatchers are yelling at one another. The fleet managers are always on the radio and the phone talking to the drivers. The managers are always getting after the dispatchers and the fleet managers, wanting to know what's going on. And customer service reps are always coming over to your desk and asking what's going on. And there's always alerts on your computer and your phone's constantly ringing. It's just so much, and just like I couldn't take it, like it was so intense. And I had to leave after 6 months. I actually went back to school because it was the only thing I could think of to get away from that place. I applied to some jobs and I got a few interviews, but never got any job offers. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to go back to school and finish my degree because this is
Yeah.
way too intense. And I ended up getting depression. And it just got, well, I guess looking back, it probably wasn't depression, it was probably burnout. But I just, after I go home, I just like comatose. I just sit in my bed. I couldn't do anything. It was really intense. And that was probably the, like you said, that was probably the worst job I've ever had.
I can see how the constant like stimuli would just overwhelms you. It takes so long and it's so hard to kind of level after that.
Like I would go to the washroom and just like breathe a huge sigh just to try to release some of that pent up stimulation that was inside of me. Is like just so much stress and tension in my body. I just try to go to the washroom. Even if I didn't have to go, I'd just be in there, just try to get rid of some of that tension. It was just really intense.
Totally.
After about a month, maybe, I started getting this feeling of anxiety as I'm taking the bus to get to work. After, a week or two, then I start to get anxiety the night before. And then I used to get anxiety at the end of my weekend. And then it was just this constant anxiety about being at that place. It just, ugh, just hated it.
Yeah. And as much as it's up to us to advocate for ourselves, I bear a little bit of a grudge to some of these places where, like, you can see me struggling probably. And nobody's like, hey, what's going on? Or, like, here's something you could do differently.
I had a supervisor who asked me when she saw that something was happening, and she asked me, but I didn't know what to tell her. Like I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
I mean, now if she asked me, I could have told her, but because I have, the context, but I didn't at the time. I just knew that I didn't feel good, and I didn't know what was causing it. I hated my job, but I didn't know why.
Yeah, it's tough too, and or I at least will like internalize that a little bit, where it's like, well, I'm struggling, but these people don't seem to be, so
Yeah.
what's wrong with me?
Absolutely.
It takes a lot of time and a lot of perspective to realize that, well, nothing. And if you drop me into a situation that fits me, I do really well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, any final thoughts for our listeners?
I guess coming from my environmental science perspective, sign the coal petition that's going around, because boy, that's going to be ugly if it doesn't get stopped.
I'm not sure when this is going to go out. Maybe in July. When is the petition? Like, when's the last time to sign it?
I actually don't know. I probably should have.
Okay.
I
Hopefully,
know.
it's still going on when this is
Yeah.
published.
Well, if the petition is done, don't stop fighting it. Do
Sure.
whatever you can. Yeah, I don't know. That's probably a good closing thought.
Sounds great. If people are interested in following you online somewhere, your website, socials, whatever, is there any there they could do to do that?
You can find me on Instagram. It's just my name. Find me on Blue Sky. It's just my first name. You'll know it's me. There's a picture of the Arctic Ocean in
Okay.
the middle of
And I can link
winter.
to those accounts in the description of the podcast as well.
Yeah, sounds good.
And if people want to follow the Alberta Worker, you can follow us on most popular social media websites. You can also visit our website, albertaworker.ca. While you're there, you can sign up for our email newsletter. We have daily, weekly, and monthly options. If you liked this episode with Justin, please rate the episode and leave a review. If you're interested in supporting the Alberta Worker, visit us at albertaworker.ca/support. Every little bit helps. If you want to be a guest on the Alberta Worker podcast, just email us at podcast@albertaworker.ca or send us a DM on any of our social media accounts. Thanks, Justin, for joining us today. Thanks to all the listeners for tuning in. And as always, solidarity.